Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Therapy Check Podcast, episode 423.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I am so thrilled to be bringing you a conversation with a guest who was first on Therapy Chat last year, just around this time, in episode 375. My guest today for our second Therapy Chat interview is Julianne Taylor Shore. Julianne Taylor Shore, LMFT, LPC, SEP, also known as Jules, is a therapist, author, and teacher who is creating spaces where people can move into more self-compassion, self-trust, empowerment, and integrity. She regularly teaches and speaks to people from all around the world and translates new understandings in neurobiology into practices that can support brain change. Jules came into the therapy world as a client who argued that feelings didn't matter, only to find herself all these years later having followed neuroscience to the obvious conclusion we are really feeling and meaning-making beings driven by our interdependence. Jules believes that embracing that reality is key to finding purpose and deep joy. And what we're going to talk about today is her new book, Setting Boundaries That Stick, How Neurobiology Can Help You Rewire Your Brain to Feel Safe, Connected, and Empowered. In this conversation, we talked about why it's so hard to set boundaries that stick. I find a common experience in therapy is that the person who's seeking help, the client, is speaking about relationships that aren't working, things that they feel about people in their lives that they don't know how to express. And oftentimes the work is about getting to really explore that inner world and what are these feelings that are coming up in these relationships and what is okay and what isn't okay with the client related to these relationships. And what are the boundaries that the client wants to set? I myself have been the client in this situation many times. You know, there's a feeling of needing a boundary, but when it comes to what to say, how to say it, I would get stuck. Not all the time, but in certain situations. And I think this is really common for people. So then what would happen for me, and I hear this a lot from clients in my office, is that I would know what I needed and know what I wanted to say, but I wouldn't be able to say it. In some situations, I would be stuck and just not know what to do. And that's an example of how you might have all the information in your brain, what's okay with you, what's not okay with you, but actually being able to set the boundary and then hold the boundary when the other person balks at what you're asking, you know, what you're saying is not okay with you, and then what you do from there. So I hope that you will find this conversation with Jules helpful and interesting, whether you are a therapist or not, because boundaries are something that we all need in order to feel safe. Jules lives in Austin, Texas with her husband, daughter, and their dog. And she's just so fun to talk with and relatable. And she's also the host, she's a co-host of the podcast, Why Does My Partner? So we'll talk about that a little bit too. As always, I appreciate you listening to Therapy Chat. Want to let you know that I'll be at Psychotherapy Networker this year, 2024, and I'm getting to do something very special with PESI, the umbrella organization that owns the Psychotherapy Networker Conference. I'm going to be there podcasting live. So if you would be interested in being a live audience member from wherever you are for some of those interviews with some of the speakers who will be at Psychotherapy Networker this year, let me know. I'll put a Google form in the show notes and you can feel free to fill it out. And if you're selected to be present with us, I'll get in touch with you. I don't know exactly how it's all going to work yet. So I don't know how many people we'll be able to have on how many of the interviews, but they will be live streamed and also released when they're recorded. They'll be recorded and released as regular episodes, but they'll also be live streamed. So you can be there live, even if you don't get to be in the live audience where you can actually interact with me and the guests, you can attend the live streams. So like I said, this is new, trying out the audience participation experience. And I don't know exactly how it's all going to fit together, but I want to see if you're even interested. If this is something that you would like to do, you can let me know by adding your name to the Google form and let me know how to contact you and I'll follow up with you about that. All right. So for now, that's it. And I'll look forward to being back with you next week. Take care. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to be joined again by my friend and colleague, Jules Taylor Shore. Jules, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
Oh, I am so delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me back.
And we are here specifically celebrating your new baby, your new book baby.
I wrote a book.
Yes, a beautiful book.
Oh, thanks.
Yes. And I actually was able to write something. What is it? An endorsement on the book.
Yes, you did.
And I said awesome. What I meant, which was that this book is exactly what I've been looking for, a book to help people understand why it's so hard to set boundaries from a neuroscience perspective, because there's plenty of books out there that are like, just say this and this and this, and you don't have to put up with that and that and that, which is all true. But when myself, and we'll get into it, but for me, it doesn't matter if I know what I should say. I can't make myself say it, or I couldn't make myself say it until I was able to get things internally organized a little bit differently. So I'm dying to get into it. But before we do, let's just start by you telling our audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my full name is Julianne Taylor Shore, and nobody calls me that. Everybody just calls me Jules, which is great. And I prefer it and love it. But on the front of the book, they put the official name. And I teach people about neurobiology, lay people and clinicians, and I love thinking about how advances in neuroscience can help us work with our brains to create deeper relationships with us, with other people, work. I like to think about how energy and information flows in the brain and which systems are doing what, and me knowing that can help me work with the brain in languages it prefers and find ways of connecting in. And when I think of the brain, you and I think about this very similarly. I think of an embodied experience. My whole nervous system is really what I'm talking about. And I teach all over internationally, and I do a podcast as well. And I write about it now, which is new for me.
Will you tell our audience the name of your book so they can just start as they're listening?
Matt.
Just look for it right now.
Sure. It's called Setting Boundaries That Stick. And it's all about how neurobiology can help you feel more safe, empowered, and connected. And yeah, Setting Boundaries That Stick. I wrote a book, which was wild. Can I tell you what was really, really hard, actually, about writing it?
Yeah.
Was that
since I haven't done one, I want to know.
Oh, my gosh. It was hard in a lot of ways. But one of the most difficult things for me was translating from the teaching therapist version into a written version, because actually I don't think about this one way. I think about this in conversations with people, and they put something into the space and I put something into the space, and we kind of co-create this conversation where we're exploring why exactly this is difficult for you in this individual way. And then I have to translate that into a written word and somehow have this one conversation with a lot of different readers. And it felt more static than I'm used to. And that part had a lot of struggle in it and push-pull in it and grief in it for me. So I was like, oh, wow, this is so different to put it down in this way that feels out of how thinking really happens and out of how energy and information flow really happens. And we have this written word that we're, the written word, and let's put this in a book. And it's great. And I love it. And it helps with accessibility. I can share these ideas with more people for a relatively reasonable amount of money, right? Because a book is not as expensive as a workshop with me or something. So I love the accessibility of it. And also, I tried to make it as much of a conversation as I could. And that part was hard. Yeah.
Now I have to ask you a couple of things about what you just said. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, please do.
I feel like the first thing that came to mind was, and I'll ask you to make this the second part you answer, because you said there was a lot of grief in that, and I need to explore a little more about that.
Yeah.
But from the other part of what you were saying, I felt like it's kind of a metaphor, because written word language, cognitive, intellectual understanding is one thing. And that's exactly what I was saying before about people can tell you, just say this, just do this. You know, here's what you need to know about boundaries. You know, now that you know about boundaries, go out and do it. And it's like, what is stopping me from being able to do that? It's not in here. Sure, I can say, don't abuse me. That's not right.
Mm-hmm.
But why can't I say, stop when someone is abusing me?
Yeah.
And I mean, I know why from neuroscience and even from my history and trauma, I know why. But then how do I change it? Right?
Right. Right. Absolutely. And the how, I'm such a how person. I love the whys, but I'm even more interested in the hows. How? Okay. So now that we know this, what does that mean about what I do?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to put something out in the world that helped you understand, this is why it's hard and this is how it works. And by the way, because we know that, here's a practice that can help you discover your particular how. Because it's actually as unique as a fingerprint, right?
Exactly.
It's individual, right? Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. And that's what makes your book and your work different.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I loved putting these ideas out there for sure. And to answer your first question, it is a grief, because it feels like I was moving from this space of collaboration and co-creation and offering the things I knew in service of this one human in front of me, and translating that into, now it's going to be static and now it's going to be out there, but I'm constantly changing and people are constantly changing. And it feels like, that dynamic connected space I'm so much a part of, and that my ideas really live in and breathe into, is really changed. It doesn't live in the same way. And I think I tried to make it an offering that had that openness and had that conversational element in it. And I know that there are limits to that because of the limits of language and the limits of putting it in print, right?
Putting something on a page and having it be, this is the information and it's not dynamic or interactive anymore. Yeah.
It's
captured. Yeah.
Oh, and I didn't even get really how important the dynamic conversation was to me and my heart and the way I live my life, actually, until I tried to stop doing that to put a friend or tried to do that in a way that the language is really hard to deal with. So the grief is, oh, I don't know if this is possible. And then my answer internally to that was, but gosh darn it, I'm going to try. So I did. I tried really hard to make it a conversation book and to help people see how once you understand a few processes about how the brain works, you can work with boundaries a little bit easier. You can find a pathway in that's really going to serve your nervous system in this individualized way. And here are some practices that could help you find that way. Because I can't tell you what to say. I can't tell you what those things are. I actually don't know what's right for you when it comes to boundaries. Yeah,
exactly.
It's like people ask me about healthy boundaries. I'm like, ooh, what is a healthy boundary? Well, that's a tough question. There are contextual differences. There are cultural differences. I am imagining, what's a healthy boundary to you today and what's a healthy boundary to you 5 years from now will be different. I can't tell you, oh, here is what a healthy boundary is. I would be putting my context and my culture and my thoughts of this moment out there in this static way. So I think of them as flexible and mobile and very deeply influenced by context and cultural spaces and what's right for you. What about your nervous system? Some folks are more introverted and they may need a different kind of boundary than somebody who's super extroverted. There's nervous system differences. What about neurodivergent stuff? We all need different things. And so I didn't want to put a static thing out there that says, this is health. I'm trying to avoid that.
Yeah. Well, I will just name that I appreciate you trying to work within kind of a patriarchal construct. These are the facts. To say, depending on your situation, what you want, what you feel at that time, how activated you are, how safe you feel, how, you know, the relationship you have with the other person, what's happening in your body, and probably like 50 other factors, it could be different, which makes it a lot harder. You know, isn't it easy to just tell everyone what they should do? Like, you know best, like top down, just do this.
Yeah. And it is easier. True. It's not as helpful, I don't think, but it sure is easier.
Right. It's not actually beneficial for the person reading it to do it that way. But, you know, the fact that you tried to really hold all of that, all of the complexity and nuance, and not make it sound like simple in an artificial way. Because I think in a way that's almost diminishing this thing that I keep saying, is how hard it is to identify what boundary you want to set in a situation, to express the boundary that you need in a situation.
To hold it when you get pushback, which you will a lot of the time. Or to hold it when someone falls apart in front of you when they hear your boundary, which can happen, right? It may not even be pushback necessarily, but like sometimes
when they
heartbreak
experience
in front
you acting differently and they don't know why.
Yeah,
so they
and they're surprised.
Resist and, it and react
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're going to, and we're talking about boundaries now in this external way, which is how most of us think about them. Oh, here's what's okay for me and here's what's not okay for me and here's what I'm going to do to take care of myself when the not okay thing happens. And that's great. I love that. That's an external boundary. And in the book, I talk about six steps that you would do away from that situation in preparation to hold that line really well. But that's not actually the only boundary there is. And I don't, when I think about, ooh, how do you support yourself in being able to do that part? I think about these other internal boundaries. And if we do that work, it makes that, oh, having that exchange with someone else that's more of a boundary conversation a lot easier.
That's beautiful. And so let's, I guess for listeners, maybe some who find this when it comes out will be people who aren't familiar with you. They may not be familiar with Therapy Chat, and they may not be familiar with really boundaries. So let's just start with how you are defining all the ways that you're defining boundaries for this conversation.
Yeah, sure. So there's an external boundary. That's when I'm going to have a boundary with another person where I'm going to do something to increase my protection, my safety, my well-being, because something just happened over there that's not so okay with me. Now, this is really different from direct request. So if I say, hey, sweetie, can we have a date night? To my husband, that's a direct request. That's not a boundary, right? If I even say to my daughter, right, Stella, you have to go to bed now. That's a little demand, but it's not a boundary. A boundary is more about what I do in the face of a moment that's not going so okay. And when I say not okay, what do we mean? I'm putting that broadly because I think sometimes we're setting a boundary when there is, it feels unsafe emotionally or physically. But I think sometimes we're setting a boundary when it feels like, ooh, this isn't honoring who I am in the way I need, or this isn't meeting my needs for my own well-being very well. So I broaden it beyond just safety stuff.
I would say like when someone is asking something, I think one of the ways that it's been hard for me professionally is when someone asks me to do something they want me to do that I don't want to do, and not knowing what's the best way to navigate like that I won't be doing that, or I don't want to do that, or I'm open to discussing it, you know, whatever I might feel about it. When I feel like, oh, you know, I think for myself, and this comes from my past experiences, that I feel if someone asks something, I'm supposed to say yes. You know, so my first thought is, oh, they need something from me, so I have to do that. And then wait, but inside I don't want to, it's not right, it's not aligned, it's not, I don't have time, I don't have energy, I don't have capacity, whatever it is. And then the reaction would be like, how could they ask this? You know?
Right. Because it is such an internal struggle that then we blame someone for asking us something of us.
Make them bad, yeah.
Rather than saying, ooh, I hear why that feels so good to you. It sounds like a great opportunity. This one's not for me. Thanks for asking though. And having that come out of your mouth is actually really challenging if you got taught that this, that nice means saying yes.
Right.
Rather than kind means being clear, which is more where I land in it. Because if we don't set boundaries, if we don't say no to the things we mean no to, I'm going to overtax my system. I'm going to end up in burnout. I'm going to end up building resentment. I'm going to end up blaming you for asking me for a thing, right? Rather than saying, ooh, you may not have the full context of my life. Of course you don't. Why would you?
How would you know?
Also, this is a no for me. And notice it didn't come with a ton of explanation about why I said no. I just said, oh, that one's not a fit for me. Thanks for asking though. You don't have to. You can if you want to. I'm not telling you not to, but I want to make an offering out there that you don't have to ask for permission or have a long explanation to justify a no, to justify a limit. It's just okay for you to have a limit. Oh, don't we have to do a lot of inner work to say yes to that?
The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marich is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
We all know that small actions can make a big difference in our lives. I know for me, I can be in a terrible mood, go out somewhere and see a stranger, make eye contact and just smile at them and find suddenly I feel good. Whether it's practicing mindfulness a few minutes each day, movement practices, small actions can have big benefits, like how taking care of your gut can support whole body health. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just 2 little capsules a day. Your body is an ecosystem, and great health starts in the gut. Your gut is a central hub for various pathways through the body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, our immune systems, and more. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living, code 25LIVING.
That's a really hard one. You know, I'm in a different space than I was like even 6 months ago. And it feels like it feels right just that you said that. But maybe if you had said that 6 months ago, I might have been like, wow, I struggle with that so much because, you know, and I will say, like, I don't want people to think I'm mean or be mad at me or whatever. And that's, you know, there's what, 8 million people? Billion people in the world?
Yes.
I'm finally okay with the fact that they don't all have to like me and I don't like them all. You know, I like a lot of them, but
that's right.
That's okay. We're different and it's okay.
Yeah. That, and this is where we get psychological boundary. So when I think about a psychological boundary, this is just a way, a practice that can help you face the truth of the situation. We are different. And I wonder if we could be in connection with each other, if we can share space with each other and be different at the same time. And I see a bunch of stuff out there in the world, not all stuff, but lots and lots. I'm seeing, oh, well, if you're different than me, then you're dangerous to me.
Right.
And I think that's gonna, if we let those seeds really grow, I think we're looking at scary stuff ahead because we are a collaborative species and finding ways to meet each other through those differences can be really handy. But in order to do that, our brains have to feel subconsciously, subcortically safe enough to say yes through that difference to connection. So I don't have to change you for me to be okay. And I don't have to let you change me to take care of you and make you feel all right either. Right. So there's this psychological boundary where we have this space between you and me where I can see, oh, your mind is your mind and my mind is my mind. And I can bear witness to your process and connect if I want to. I won't want to with everyone, but connect if I want to you while you're in your process and I don't have to change it. And I think that's like, I think of it as like a respectful space. So let's say I said something. Let's say you and I were in a conversation about a thing and you asked me for a thing and, ooh, it wasn't a fit for me. And I said no. And then I see a moment of a surprise.
I feel disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. I see a moment of disappointment across your face. Here's my thought, is that that moment of disappointment is actually an important part of you becoming yourself through time. I'm going to say that again because I really do mean this. It is a really important moment of you becoming yourself through time. So let's break down. Oh, there was a disappointment. Well, how did that happen? Did Jules make that happen because she said a no? Or is it a little bit more complex than that? Was there a longing? Was there a hope? Was there an expectation that you're holding? And in order to let that go, you have to go through the little mini grief of disappointment. Mm. Why would I want to save you from that? We want to because it feels hard, but that was because we were told that it's bad when somebody feels a bad feeling. What if that's the part that's not true? Like sometimes it's really bad when somebody feels a bad feeling. Sometimes it's full of lots of pain. And sometimes it's just someone becoming themselves through time and adjusting as their way of seeing the world interacts with the world as it actually is. And there's this energy transfer process that's happening where I go, oh, that's not how it's going to go. It's going to maybe go this way instead. And there's an emotion that comes with that because whether we like it or not, we're feeling beings that sometimes think, not thinking beings that sometimes feel. So you're going to be witnessing people with emotions all the time. So when I think about that psychological boundary, I think, oh, I could let you have your experience and be kind and connected and compassionate to you if I want to be close to you and not change what is happening inside for you. This is like a map of the, I heard for years, quit taking stuff personally. The psychological boundary is a how of don't take stuff personally.
Mm.
It's like a way to bear witness to someone in their difference while staying connected to them if you want to.
I hear an invitation to take responsibility for your own experience and feelings too.
Oh, totally.
On the side of the one who was disappointed, that it's not up to you to fix my problem.
That's right.
My disappointment or my expectation that wasn't met or whatever. And that's not like mean or bad.
That's not mean or bad.
I'm not bad and you're not bad. It's just a thing.
And then because I'm an empathetic person who loves to love people and be connected to the world, sees your disappointment and I have sadness. And guess what? It's not for you to fix that in me either. I take responsibility for holding my sadness when I see your sadness. And then I'm not going to fix it by going, never mind, I'll go ahead and do it.
Okay, fine, I will. I'll do what I don't want to do.
Now we're just like holding stickiness together, right? Because you know I don't want to do it.
Now we both feel bad. Great.
I don't feel bad. Exactly. But a lot of times we get messages that if you're nice, it means people around you will not have unpleasant feelings. That's a hard message to live with because it's not actually based in reality. People are going to have hard feelings near you all the time. And unless you did something egregious, call someone a name or hit somebody or something, you know, something awful, a lot of their feeling has very little to do with you. A lot of their feeling has to do with them looking at this moment compared to every goal they have for their future, plus everything they know from their history. And whoop, a feeling comes to tell me what this moment means to me right now. There was very little of that that had anything to do with the other person.
Right.
And I don't say this to say, don't take responsibility for your actions. In fact, an entire, not just one chapter, but many sections of the book, a whole chapter plus many other sections of the book are devoted to what I call a containing boundary, where you put a pause between what you feel and what you do so that you can double check your own integrity. And is my action actually likely to have the impact I'm hoping? If I do this thing, if I say this thing next, is it likely going to be in meet my relational intention, meet my value system for myself? So I want us to own and face this really hard reality is you have influence in the world and no control in the world. Yeah,
let's
see a smile.
Let's say that one again.
Yeah, you have influence in this world and no control. And when I own that I have influence, then I care about how I impact people. And the containing boundary uses the neuroscience of compassion to help calm down your lower brain and add a pause between what you're feeling and what you're doing so that you can double check really, really quickly, very rapidly at subcortical speeds, actually, your value system so that, ooh, it can be easier to maybe do the thing that's harder, right? Often the more integritous action is more difficult. We're going to give ourselves support to do the hard thing so that I show up in a way where I'm proud of myself. Even if the other person didn't show up in a way that I loved, it doesn't matter. I leave that conversation going, you know what? I did pretty good.
Yeah. That is, and it's so freeing because you aren't just living in reaction to what everybody else is doing while feeling powerless or disempowered and feeling that they are responsible for my happiness. It's up to them to make me succeed right. or achieve what I want to achieve. You know, if I'm upset, they have to make it better. And if I'm, you know, needing if I want them to do something, like example, this is with other people, but I know like, a lot of parents are like, I feel anxious when it's messy in the house. So my child needs to clean up their room or else, you know, it's not okay for me. And it's like, sure, you might have a rule that there's certain chores, but it's not up to them to make you not feel anxious by having their room be clean. It's up to you to manage your anxiety.
That's right. And we don't have to put that out on somebody else. And
because you're still anxious. I mean, you are still going to be anxious. It's not really about their room. It's just that's what you're reacting to this moment. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. So we can put a pause between that feeling. Oh, the anxiety I need is to stop. I'm going to urgently do something. And maybe I call out, clean your room, from the other room. Towards the kid in the iPad.
Who is not
paying any attention to me right now. Or I can put that pause and wonder about, in my value system, and this would be so individual. I can't tell anybody else what their value system should be. Mm-hmm. In my value system, my relational intention, this feels important for me to support my kiddo in having an organized space. So let's imagine, I put a pause. Now it's not about my anxiety anymore. I'm holding my heart right now for that folks who are just listening. And I'm holding my heart right now, which is my compassion gesture. And I'm reminding myself of my keywords, courage and kindness. Courage is my value system word and kindness is my relational intention word. So I go, courage and kindness, Jules. And then I wonder, what is really important to me? And I go in to the room and I ask Stella gently to turn off her iPad for a sec. And I say, hey, remember last night when we were talking about how your mind feels clearer when there's not too much stuff on your floor? You told me that. You showed me your dresser and you showed me your floor and you were saying how calm it made you. Do you remember that, sweetie? Yeah, I do. Okay. Well, I noticed that today, your roof has exploded. I don't even know how it happened, my love. I wonder if by the next 2 hours, sometime in the next 2 hours, that could be done so that you feel that calm again. And if you want me to help you, I will. Or if, hey, I have a boundary around that, that's great. Hey, do you want me to set a timer so you can know when you want to start? Or do you want me to walk in there with you so I can help you move from this iPad space into a room cleaning space. And then when you're done, it can be done. So notice I'm still maybe setting a boundary around some this rules in my house, right?
Like it will be cleaned up.
It will be cleaned up, but I'm doing it really differently than out of that anxiety space.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally possible. So that's the kind of thing this practice could help with. But it can also help with folks who need a pause between the feeling and the shutting down. So we talk all the time about people who want to pause between feeling and yelling, or feeling and, you know, kind of snapping at people, where anger is a feeling, but it's showing up in a behavior that's kind of explosive or hard in some way. But I don't know if we talk enough about needing a pause between feeling and shutting up. So sometimes people, when they're losing their containing boundary, it's actually they go more quiet. They go more withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
So what if I have a moment where my likely answer when I see the room is to go, never mind, I'm not going to talk to her about it, forget it. And it's out of that space, or that, never mind, it's hopeless, nothing's going to change about this anyway. Well, I put my hand on my heart. That's my compassion gesture. Everyone has their unique one. And I say courage and kindness, and I go, oh, right. The courageous, kind thing is to walk across the room and support my kiddo in facing this with me. And I don't have to shut down. So sometimes my containing boundary work actually helps me say more rather than less. And it's harder. So I'm just owning that. It takes effort. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. What were you thinking?
Well, I think, you know, I can relate to, I'm not the blow up person. I've never been that, because that wouldn't have worked in my situation. It's probably partly just how I am. And it's probably partly a way that I learned to be. And so I don't know if this fits here, but if it doesn't, tell me. But like, what comes up for me sometimes is, let's say if it was that I wanted the room to be cleaned up. That was our rule. And I wanted to set that in place. And I said, hey, you know, I need you to clean up your room. That would be how I would have done it when my kids were younger. I mean, they're out of the house now. You know, I noticed that your room is getting kind of messy. It looks like, you know, I need you to clean it up. I can help you if you want. You know, I know it's can be overwhelming, but if the reaction wasn't what I needed, expected, if somehow it didn't come back, hoped the way I wanted it to, or hoped it would, then I just would be like lost and I wouldn't know what to say. So, you know, externally it was like appearing like withdrawn, shut down. But really for me, it's more like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. And then what I would do is, God, I'm so bad at setting boundaries. I know I need to be better at this. And then it goes like this big like shame thing. And then I'm just beating myself up inside, but nothing's happening about the room, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that is what happens, right? And so, yes, you're talking about this precisely how I mean it. So yeah, in that kind of moment, there's going to be the feeling, right, that comes, which is maybe worry or anger because they didn't have the thing. Who knows what the feeling is, or fear maybe, or feeling flustered maybe is a feeling. And then what's going to happen after that, is one move after another of hopeless and shame and never mind. And I'm just bad at this. And we're going to put a pause and go, oh, sweetie, of course you're flustered. That is a hard moment. That kiddo did not answer you like you were hoping. And that is tough. Okay. Here's how we're going to do it anyway. So hopefully we've practiced. I have 6 steps that you use to prep. And if you've practiced, then you already have that soothing plan in place where you're going to take care of yourself in that moment. And you could go, you are right. I am an annoying mom right now. And also, this is what's happening next. And we don't get to move on with our day until we do this. I remember the first time I had my daughter clean up something with me, and she really put a hard no in. She was probably 2.5, 3 years old.
Sounds right.
Yep. And I asked her to help me clean up toys we had been playing with together. And here she is, this sweet one. Oh,
so cute.
So cute. Going, no. And just looking at me and like with fire in her eyes, like, what you gonna do? Yeah. And so I sat down next to the wall and I said, okay, well, mommy will play after the cleaning happens. I'll clean it with you, but I'm going to wait for you to start. And this little sweet, very persistent child I have danced around me and tried to get me to move, for 45 minutes. Now, not everybody has that kind of time, but I knew I did in that moment. And I committed to saying, I am going to do this. And you know what I had to say to myself was I had to have my big why in place. And I had it already. I had my big why in place. I want Stella to know that it is totally okay to keep saying no, even when somebody pushes you. Because I have a girl child and I do not want her one day to not feel like it's okay to keep saying no when that boy pushes her to do more than she wants to do, or that boss asks her to do something that really isn't okay. I need to set her up with protection because she is a girl child walking through this world. And so I was like, well, I will model for her what it is to say no 100 times in a row. And now, by the way, it worked out well for parenting. Girls just want to have fundamental rights. I love your t-shirt so much.
Thank you.
Yes, I love this. It's like when we find that oomph in there that says, you know what? This is hard, but it is worth it to do this hard thing. It's easier to really stick with it. And there was a side like benefit to all of this, of course, because she actually does know that I'm really firm when I say, oh no, I'm not going to keep doing a thing. So notice my boundary wasn't, you must clean up. My boundary was, mommy is not going to play until the cleaning happens because it's my behavior that I get to be in control of. I actually cannot control her body. So me asking her to do this thing is actually a request. And me saying, here's what I'm going to do to take care of me and our family's needs right now. And so I'm going to not do this other thing until this thing happens. So now I have my boundary action I can really stick to instead of trying to get her to do a thing. It's more just, hey, I'm just going to tell you and show you how it's possible to say no. And again, and again, and again.
It's beautiful. And I heard you saying how it's your behavior that you're in control of. And I heard you demonstrate how you didn't, it's not, I won't love you. I'll be mad at you. I won't be in here with you and you'll have to be all alone. You know, it was just, I'm still here. I still love you. I'm still the same, but we can't, I won't be playing with you. You can play. I won't play.
I'm just not going to play in this moment. Mommy's not okay with playing until we clean up this part of the house.
Oh gosh, Jules, I see the time and I wish we had more time to talk about this because it's fascinating and there's so much nuance and there's so much to tease out, but just what you've shared so far has been really beneficial. And I want to say, I know that people can get your book and we want people to find your book and other ways of working with you to do this. But I want to tell people, you didn't name it, but your podcast is called Why Does My Partner? And it's kind of about the same things, like navigating these relational challenges. And you have that. You want to say a little bit about it real quick?
Yeah,
and then we'll
sure.
tell them where they can find more of all your goodness.
Absolutely. So Why Does My Partner is a podcast where me and a couple of other lovely ladies, Rebecca Wong and Vicky Issa, we chat about relational questions that are coming in to us. And a lot of it is about boundaries. A lot of it is about how what relational skills would be helpful to you in this kind of relationship dilemma. And you can find that and download it wherever you get your podcast. And if you want to know more about me, my website is juliannetaylorshore.com. And on there, you can find workshops. I have all sorts of offerings, including I'm super excited. I'm starting them this year. I'm doing a new version. I've done them before, but this is a brand new overhaul to these teeny tiny boundary workshops. And when I say teeny tiny, what I mean is they're small group. So there's no more than 10 people allowed. I give them both in person and online. They are live, not recorded or anything. And you can come and bring your stuff and we can be in conversation about these issues over 20 hours and have other people who are also interested in exploring this. We learn from each other. We engage in deep personal work, and it's a less expensive way to of engaging than working with me one-on-one. So I try to make it's an accessibility thing and a group thing and a workshop thing. So you can find that information online. And of course, my book is available wherever books are sold. It's called Setting Boundaries That Stick. So I'd love to be connected. Feel free to reach out. And thank you again so much for having me on your amazing podcast. I love you and your work. So I'm just celebrating you.
Oh, thanks. And I also want to name that Jules is going to be presenting two different talks at Psychotherapy Networker in March in DC. So that'll be a place where you can learn live from Jules. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many ways that you are out here spreading your goodness with the world. So thank you for what you do and for being my friend.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you too. I love it. It's good to see you.
You too.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.